Thank you very much. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Thursday, June 6, 2024. This is our third case on our oral calendar. This is A23-1430, State of Minnesota versus Dakota Lynn Carey. Counsel for appellant, you will have 15 minutes for your initial arguments, followed by 15 minutes by respondent, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant's attorney if you so choose. Please be mindful of your time. We do have one of the squares has the time in there in the Marshall's square there. Also, this is being live streamed as well as we are making an audio recording of this proceeding. However, no other recordings are permitted. And if we do run into technical difficulties at all, we will make sure that we will address them and allow each of the parties the sufficient time that is set aside to make your arguments. So with that, counsel for appellant, please you may begin. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing.
May it please the court, my name is Kirsten Pagel. I'm an attorney at Nylund Johnson Lewis in Minneapolis, and I am counsel for appellant Dakota Carey. Mr. Carey was a passenger in a vehicle pulled over for equipment violations. During the first minutes of the traffic stop, Officer Host noted certain facts giving rise to his conclusion that Mr. Carey was presently under the influence of illegal drugs. As a passenger in a vehicle, intoxication is not a crime. Nevertheless, Officer Host utilized this observation to unlawfully and continually expand the traffic stop's scope and duration. While his efforts ultimately discovered illegal drugs, the findings of that search should have been suppressed as the expansion of the stop was unconstitutional. The district court's denial of Mr. Carey's motion to suppress must be reversed. Importantly, as this court well knows, it should review the district court's ruling de novo, as it includes questions involving Mr. Carey's constitutional rights as related to searches and seizures. Specifically, this court should determine, again, de novo, whether the state has articulated an adequate basis for the search and seizure at issue. The state has not done so. Again, as your honors are well aware, warrantless searches and seizures are generally unreasonable, and the burden is placed upon the state to show that an exception to that general rule applies. Here, the state relies on the Terry exception to validate the expansion of the traffic stop. Under the Terry framework, the court must look at first, one, whether the traffic stop was justified at its inception. Importantly, Mr. Carey does not dispute this factor. He acknowledges that the traffic stop was justified at its inception. So the focus is on Terry factor number two, which is whether the actions of the police during the stop were unreasonably related to and justified by the circumstances that gave rise to the stop in the first place, or are based on a particularized and objective basis for suspecting the seized person of criminal activity. Your honors, just to lay out kind of the very important legal framework before I dive into the facts, again, if incremental intrusions during a stop are not tied directly to the circumstances which rendered the stop permissible, each incremental intrusion must be supported by independent probable cause or a reasonable, articulable suspicion of other illegal activity. Importantly, a reasonable, articulable suspicion of other illegal activity is more than a mere hunch, which we would argue is all that was present in this case. Each question by the officer, each request to search by the officer, or each act that extends the duration of a traffic stop is an incremental intrusion, which must be supported by this reasonable, articulable suspicion of other illegal activity. And importantly, your honors, consent cannot cure an unlawful incremental intrusion that was not supported by reasonable, articulable suspicion. With this applicable legal framework established, I think our time this morning is most best spent by walking through a timeline of the traffic stop at issue in this case and noting the order in which Officer Host observed different facts. At the initiation of the traffic stop with Mr. Carey, the subject traffic stop, Officer Host noted that the vehicle contained four individuals.
Well, counsel, we are familiar with the facts and I certainly do appreciate the background, but I think it would be helpful to really dive into the issue of each step and why it does not meet the reasonable articulable suspicion standard, which is a relatively low standard. It has to be more than a hunch, but it's certainly less than probable cause. And so I'm reading through your arguments. It seems that you attack each of the individual facts, but we have to look at the totality of the circumstances, right?
Yes, Your Honor. The view is on the totality of the circumstances. However, even on a totality of the circumstances view, the officer still did not have reasonable articulable suspicion that Mr. Carey was engaged in illegal activities specifically in this case, possessing illegal drugs. At the initiation of the traffic stop, the officer host did note that the vehicle had come from a house that was associated with drug use. However, he did not know which individuals in the car, if any, had entered or exited that house while the car was parked there.
Didn't you know that at least one person had entered the vehicle from the house, though?
Yes, Your Honor. At the initiation of the traffic stop, he did know that at least one individual exited the house and entered the vehicle. However, he did not know that individual's identity.
But that's not what you're addressing, isn't it? Shouldn't we first be focusing on what was the first expansion of the stop that you say is not supported by reasonable suspicion, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so could we talk about, and that, as I understand it, but correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Pagel, that would be when the officer decided to question the driver, not about just the traffic violation, but about the appellant, right? That's
Your
the
Honor.
First expansion. So
yep.
Could you focus on what the officer knew then, which to justify, or from your perspective, would not justify that expansion?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because I understand earlier you're saying, well, intoxication is not enough, right? I get that. But, you know, it does seem that there were other things that he knew at that point.
Yes, Your Honor. So at that time, when Officer Host began questioning the driver, Officer Host knew, again, that that vehicle had been parked at the house and at least one person had entered the vehicle. He noted by seeing Mr. Carey in the back of the seat, in the back seat of the car, that his motions were exaggerated and his skin was shiny. Officer Host also had knowledge of previous interactions with Mr. Carey while he was under the influence of drugs. So he knew that Mr. Carey had used drugs in the past. And he knew that Mr. Carey had attempted to leave the vehicle. However, Mr. Carey did immediately respond to police instructions to remain put. And there was no evidence of drug use in the vehicle. Officer Post.
Can I just stop you there? Would it be fair to say that the officer also didn't just know about previous drug use, but that there was an extensive criminal drug history?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. However, as the Supreme Court has established, just because an individual has however lengthy of a criminal history related to drug use, that alone cannot support a finding of reasonable articulable suspicion. It can be considered.
But this isn't alone, right? I mean, there are several of these things that we'd say not enough alone, the fact that he was nervous, not alone, or smoking a cigarette or something, but it's the collection of things.
Yes, Your Honor. However, we would posit at this point, all Officer Host knew was that Mr. Carey was likely under the influence of drugs, not that he currently possessed drugs in the vehicle. Again, there was no evidence of drug use in the vehicle. He did not see drugs or drug paraphernalia, and he did not smell drugs.
But if we look at so you listed, I think, at least six different circumstances here. And if we look at the totality of circumstances, including his past criminal drug offenses, the fact that the officer had encountered him under the influence of drugs, and he had observed the exaggerated hand movements, his skin was shiny, he came from a well-known drug house, and combining, and also the fact that when the car left and it picked up at least one person from that house, you acknowledge in your responsive brief that the car turned on its lights on and off a unknown number of times, which the officer interpreted as an unknown signal there, that he actually tried to leave the vehicle. Why isn't that enough to suspect that he might be in possession of drugs? Because as you know, he's had many encounters with police. He knows that being under the influence as a passenger isn't a crime, but usually flight is often an indication of criminal activity. And in this case, why isn't that enough, in addition to all the other circumstances, enough to indicate to the officer that he may actually be in possession of drugs, not just under the influence of drugs?
Yes, Your Honor. I would actually like to point the court to a unpublished Minnesota Court of Appeals opinion on which Judge Jassin was on the panel, State v. Salo, Salo. And again, I acknowledge it's an unpublished decision, but it's A171296. In that case, the passenger tried to exit the vehicle quickly, in the police's opinion, which he assumed was suspicious. He recognized the passenger from previous dealings. There was a caution on his record in the with the Moorhead Police Department that noted that he was commonly with narcotics. And the passenger began smoking, which the officer determined was a sign of nervousness. In this case, the Court of Appeals determined that evidence of drugs, which were later found, should have been suppressed under those circumstances. And I think this case, that case, although unpublished, is remarkably similar to this case. But Judge Reyes, I also wanted to point out, yes, maybe the first incremental intrusion was allowable, but the officer continued to expand the scope with every question, with every minute. He kept the passengers on the side of the road. So with every fact he learned, when he talked to the driver of the vehicle, for example, he learned that they specifically picked up a passenger KO, not Mr. Carey. So the officer now had knowledge that Mr. Carey was not the individual that had just come out of the residence. The driver then downplayed Mr. Carey's nervousness, attributing it to Mr. Carey's ADHD, and he affirmatively stated that he wasn't aware whether or not Mr. Carey was intoxicated. And so now we need to evaluate again what the officer knows and if the officer has a reasonable, articulable suspicion to continue expanding the traffic stop.
Are you talking about the second step?
Let me
Sorry, go
change the
ahead. Go
facts
ahead.
a little bit and ask you a hypothetical. Let's assume that an officer encounters an individual whose behavior indicates apparent drug use, not possession, but drug use. Is it an unreasonable expansion of the, and let's assume the officer stopped the individual. It's under the same circumstance of this case. Officer stops a car. The passenger is the one who seems to be behaving in a way that would indicate drug use, not necessarily possession. Is it an unlawful expansion of the scope of the stop for the officer who infers likely drug use to ask the passenger, where did you get your drugs?
Yes, Your Honor, I would argue that it is an unlawful expansion of the traffic stop.
Why is that not a reasonable investigation? If someone is apparently under the influence of illegal drugs, to ask the individual where did you get the drugs from?
The scope of the inquiry is whether the individual being seized is currently committing a criminal act. And so being high is not a criminal act. The fact that the individual consumed drugs was not a criminal act. And so I think that the scope of the inquiry that you're asking, the hypothetical you're posing is it's a criminal act done by someone who is not the individual, it's not the individual being seized. I would also note, Your
Sure it
Honor,
is. I mean, the purchase of drugs, both the distribution of drugs and the purchase of drugs is illegal, isn't it? A drug deal? I mean, isn't that a crime that the officer can investigate?
It indicates that the individual once possessed drugs, Your Honor. However, I would say that I still think it's an unlawful expansion. For example, in cases before the Minnesota Supreme Court where an individual is intoxicated by alcohol as a passenger in a vehicle, any questioning of that individual to determine, for example, whether there is an open container in that vehicle is unlawful. I would direct the court to State v. Burback for that
right, because
assertion.
an open container, I mean, I'm talking about drugs that were purchased by the individual under the influence of drugs, not a crime that might apply to the driver of the car for having an open container in the car. I'm talking about the individual the officers now encountered. I mean, why can't the officer move from the basis of the stop? I'm focused on the driver. Oh, look, there's something that that a passenger may be involved in. Can't the officer, is it, I guess I shouldn't make it a leading question. Is it not reasonable for the officer to make a simple request? Where did you get the drugs? To expand the scope in that narrow fashion.
Your Honor, I see my time has run. May I answer your question?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. Your Honor, my interpretation of the case law and what I believe the Terry framework establishes is current or ongoing criminal activity. So I do not believe that.
So officers aren't allowed to investigate previous criminal? I mean, so if you, I mean, the officer looks in the car and sees what appears to be tools used in a previous burglary that you can't investigate. The officer can only look at future crimes.
Your Honor, I know that it's a thin line, but I would argue that visible evidence of a crime that is being investigated is different than the lawful act of being intoxicated within a vehicle. I do think that those are two different circumstances. And the hypothetical you pose of tools being in a vehicle would allow for further questioning.
Thank you, counsel. Investigate a previous crime.
I'm sorry, I did not hear that, Judge Ross.
To investigate the possibility of a prior crime.
Yes, Your Honor, and I understand that does not seem to be laying correctly. However, I just would say that intoxication as a passenger is not a crime. And I would point the court to the Minnesota Supreme Court's decisions as it relates to alcohol intoxication in passengers and would conclude there.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We will now turn to respondent. You have 15 minutes. The clock is set for you. Please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Lindsay Lindstrom, and I am an assistant Crow Wing County attorney, and I represent the respondent, the state of Minnesota, in this matter. Without really rehashing any of the facts, I would like to preliminarily touch on, I think, an important fact that I disagree with appellant's recitation on. The driver stated fairly early on in the stop that he had just picked up appellant. So there's a reasonable inference there that he had just picked him up from the house. And less than 2 minutes later, Officer Ho spoke with appellant, who stated, "Yeah, this is the house I'm living in." He acknowledged that the house, this drug house, was the house he was living in. So very early on, where appellant's already tied to that house.
Am I correct that the house, as I understood the description, it was known to be a house where drugs are used?
And the officer had testified that he had personally, within a recent time frame, stopped vehicles either coming to or going from the house where methamphetamine was discovered during those traffic stops.
Right, but is there any testimony or indication that not that drugs were being used in the house, but that there is a distribution of drugs going on? The house is a place where drugs are being bought and sold or or passed from person to person?
I don't recall that specifically. There was the additional information from the other officer speaking to Officer Host is on the body cam about the recent information of appellant distributing controlled substances or methamphetamine specifically.
Right, so why would it? Why, I'm trying to understand why the house would matter in all of this. If what we're saying is this is a place where people use drugs, not a place where people, I mean, it'd be different if what we're talking about is, you know, the officers have been investigating this house because people come and go and there are drug deals going on all the time in the driveway, in front of the house, on the porch, whatever. Here we're talking about a place where drugs are used. I'm going back to the argument that's been presented by the appellant that we're talking about drug use here, not drug possession, as the suspicion, the basis for the officer's suspicion is the officer suspects the defendant has been using drugs. Why do we get to go further than that if we're not talking about a house where drugs are distributed?
Well, when the testimony where people were leaving the house and possessed drugs, and possession, as I think we all can agree, is unlawful. In order to use drugs, there has to be some possession on the way to the use. So right there's, I think, always a criminal activity associated with unlawful consumption. This isn't a situation where someone's taking a prescription, but they're to use methamphetamine, you are going to possess it at some point prior to the
Right,
use.
but that doesn't seem to get you any further than the fact that he was under the influence. You could say the same thing. Well, he's under the influence, so that means he must have possessed it at some time. Therefore, we get to investigate further whether he possessed it. I think the case law is pretty clear that that's not enough. Person's under the influence of drugs. That doesn't mean, I have reason to suspect that the person possesses drugs. Now I can conduct a search. Am I right about that? Am I wrong about it? And if I'm right about it, why does it matter that this is a house where drugs are used?
Well, I think it matters in this case because there was all of the suspicious lights flashing beforehand and appellant appearing immediately under the influence.
Meaning what? Why does it matter? Again, if we're talking about a place where drugs are bought and sold, which I don't think is the evidence here, then the flashing of the lights might matter. But so what, that someone's flashing their lights in front of a house where drugs are being used? What is that indicative of, since there's no evidence that this is a place where drugs are bought and sold?
And I can't say that there's no evidence of the place where the drugs were bought and sold. I can't recall from the transcripts right now whether that was just
So why
specific.
does the flashing of the lights matter? What is it indicative of?
Because it's all part of the totality of the circumstance. The
Right, totality.
officer.
So it's part of the totality, and so the flashing of the lights adds what?
It adds a suspicion that there's a signal that a drug deal has perhaps occurred, or there's a criminal activity, and that's why they're. You know, signaling rather than getting out of the vehicle and going up there. It's part of the officer, their training and
The
experience.
officer testified that the flashing of the lights indicated a signal for drug dealing for
Not
purchase, or
specific.
is that just what we're speculating now?
He testified that it, and I don't have it directly in front of me. I can pull it up, but that it was unusual and suspicious to him and made him suspect criminal activity, but it was certainly unusual.
Well, what criminal activity? I guess that's what I'm getting at. What did the officer say? I suspected with the flashing of the lights. That was a signal that there's a per that it's time it, you know oh the bar is open, come purchase drugs. Is it a signal of something other than just I was suspicious because the lights were flashing? That doesn't sound like a reasonable, articulable suspicion of criminal behavior.
Well, and the officer didn't stop the vehicle for the lights flashing. So that wasn't an independent consideration. Oh, the lights are flashing. I'm stopping this vehicle because I am suspicious of drugs. He stopped the vehicle already with that information, but he stopped the vehicle for the light issue. And
No, I
then
know, but
when
you're relying in part on the flashing of the lights, and I'm trying to see if there's any testimony that would inform us as to what the officer inferred from the flashing of the lights, other than just it was a suspicious thing that the lights were flashing. Suspicious of what?
And I would have to pull up the transcript to try and find that more specifically. I just don't have it in front of me.
So, counsel, it's perhaps what we have here is an individual who may be under the influence. The officer knows has an extensive criminal drug history and made a, I think, frantic, the officer said, effort to exit the car. Is that enough for reasonable suspicion? What's the best case law that you have which would tell us, yeah, that's enough?
Well, if I could, I do believe that's enough for reasonable suspicion. And I'm just speaking of Taylor, you know, we have the standard, it's more than a hunch, but less than preponderance of the evidence, less clearly less than probable cause.
Reasonable
So
suspicion of what?
reasonable suspicion of drug possession. And then I also think that it's reasonable to ask a person, as you did ask appellant attorney earlier, reasonable to suspect, hey, this person's involved in obtaining drugs, which is an unlawful act to obtain illegal controlled substances. Ask them where if they obtain drugs, and then you can investigate the person selling drugs. Also, you know, unlike alcohol, I think to distinguish from Burback, just having alcohol as an individual over 21 is not unlawful. It's something that people consume publicly at bars, in patios, whatsoever. Just having a person who's under the influence of alcohol in a vehicle without something else to make you think that they're hiding it and drinking it in the vehicle doesn't give rise to a reasonable suspicion that there's an open container in the vehicle, because it's in and of itself not unlawful to consume alcohol as the passenger, as long as you're not in the vehicle. With controlled substances, methamphetamine, it's always unlawful to possess them, which is what is necessary to consume them. That it has to have been possessed in order to be consumed. So then that's something that's going to be more likely to be hidden. It's not out in, most of the time, people don't have their drugs sitting out in the open. They're going to secret them away. And in this case, Mr. Carey didn't just try and leave the vehicle. He didn't say anything to anybody. He just opened the door and he tried to leave. He didn't say, hey, bye, friends. I'm going to come back later. He frantically tried to rush away. And this is after the officer had already observed him, clearly under the influence, as he had in many previous encounters with him.
You're suggesting that by him getting out of the car, the officer should suspect he's trying to flee?
I think it goes into all of it put together, that we're not looking at any one factor individually, but all of them put together. And I do think it's important that it's not, it's just a suspicion. It's not a no. I don't. The officer doesn't have to know that he has drugs. If he knew he had drugs, then it'd be probable cause, and we're talking about a different standard. It's just, is this reasonable to suspect and ask that question?
So, all right, just so I'm clear, make it a linear statement for me. The officer had reason to believe that Mr. Carey had drugs on his person sufficient to expand the scope of the stop because what specifically? List in the totality of the circumstances. Why an officer would have reason to believe that there was a that Mr. Carey might possess drugs sufficient to expand the scope.
Because he had the prior lengthy criminal history with drugs, he was currently under the influence of drugs, he was currently coming from and living at a house where multiple people had been stopped coming and going with methamphetamine. He immediately tried to distance himself from the vehicle, get away from the officer. And then I wouldn't discount the strange signaling, but I'm not saying that it adds a whole lot to it. And then there's additionally later on the tip that he had, that law enforcement had been receiving multiple reports of drug distribution. And as I don't see any other questions in front of me at this point, so unless there are any additional questions, this would conclude my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And it doesn't look like there are any other questions. So appreciate your comments. We will turn back to appellant's attorney. You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I wanted to address some of the transcript questions, and then now that I've had some time to think, return to Judge Ross's hypothetical. So first, there was a questioning from the panel related to the signaling of the lights. And so Officer Host was questioned, what did the turning on of the lights cause you to believe? And this is on page 10 of the hearing transcript. And Officer Host says, I was kind of unsure. Obviously, it was kind of in my head that it could have been some sort of signal, whether it the person in the car was trying to have someone come outside, but it was certainly not normal. I knew that at least. Judge Ross, I believe you were questioning what the officer believed the turning on and off of lights to be, and it seems to be inconclusive, but he determines it's some sort of signal. Also, as promised, I'd like to return to the hypothetical now that I've had a few moments to think about it, and I would like to amend my previous answer, specifically whether the officer could have asked, where did you buy the drugs? I do think that the officer could incrementally expand the stop lawfully in that way. However, asking that question and then the seized individual could decline to answer. Asking that question, though, however, is different than incrementally expanding the search on the belief that there is a possession of drugs. So I do believe Officer Host could have asked in this situation, where did you get the drugs? Since he believed the individual was high. But just intoxication does not prove possession presently. Here we need something else, something that's not present in this case. What we have here is observations which lead to a reasonable, articulable suspicion that the individual is under the influence, which is not a crime.
So there's a proposition in the Chinese art of war that says, never defend a weak position. So very nice pivot from your previous answer. Most lawyers never do that. So
Well, thank you. I apparently needed about 10 minutes to really digest what you were getting at. One last thing I wanted to point out to the court. Is that she alludes to the tip that was provided by the other officer. I will note to the court that before the tip occurred, Officer Host talked to the driver of the vehicle. He then talked to Mr. Carey, and then he received the tip. So there are two incremental expansions of the traffic stop before Officer Host is told by another officer at the scene that Mr. Carey may be in the business of selling methamphetamine.
now, you
And so
heard Ms. Lindstrom list the circumstances among the totality of circumstances that the state would say it was enough to expand the scope. Would you please respond to the list that she provided?
yes, Your Honor. I agree with kind of a lot of the questions you were posing. Yes, they had come from a house that Officer Host had associated or called a drug house. And actually, the testimony about that is on page 8 in the transcript. He says, I knew from prior experience, prior incidences, that it was a well-known drug house. I also knew that there were several other people staying there that have past involvement with controlled substances, which is a sort of vague statement. He goes on to say that by drug house, he means either that there has been drug activity reported, or we're familiar with several people that are living there that are habitual drug users and have been involved in recent drug cases. He does not specify what type of drug cases those are, and really seems the either kind of makes his statement more vague, either that there are drug users there or that there are people associated with drug cases. And so just because they were present outside that house, to me, and I think to a reasonable officer, should not indicate that Officer Carey purchased drugs at that house or left that house with drugs. Also, as I indicated,
Do you agree that there's some evidence that the officers were aware of, that people had previously been stopped coming from that house who possessed drugs?
yes, the officer host does go on to say that at some point, but he does not conclude as you were, and I think that's also on page 8, and I'm sorry, I just don't have that section highlighted, but he does not go on to state that drug deals are happening in that house, that that is a place where people are going to purchase drugs or obtain drugs. And I see my time has ran out, so I will conclude unless there are any other questions.
Does not appear there are any other questions. So thank you both very much for your arguments and your briefing. It was both very well done. We appreciate that. We will be taking the matter under advisement, and we will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame. And that is our last case set for the oral argument. And the court is now in recess for our non-oral calendar and to conference. Thank you both.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honors.